TJ Flyways Live, courtesy of racesontheweb.com. Here is your host, TJ Buchenbarger.
Thank you, Beth. Coming to you live here from the Engine Pro Studios just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Later on in the program tonight, Brian Liskey and I will break down the big Legends event at Fremont Speedway, also their Hall of Fame inductions, and then David Byrd in our third segment tonight to discuss their family's return to the the Indianapolis 500 with Brian Clausen. That's going to be a neat thing in segment three. But we're going to kick off the show tonight with one of the best stories of the sprint car season so far to date, with Lee Jacobs joining us in segment one here, fresh off his All-Star Circuit of Champions victory at Wayne County Speedway. And Lee, for people that don't know, your family has very special ties to that racetrack. So for some of the newer people that might be listening in that might not know the history, why is it so was it so important to get that victory at Wayne County?
That was huge for me. You know, that track, in 1965, my great-grandpa built that racetrack. And so there's a lot of history in the family. You know, my great-grandpa built the racetrack. My grandpa raced there. Actually, my grandma raced there. All my uncles started their careers racing at that racetrack, and so did my dad. So there's a huge history and lineage of the Jacobs family at that racetrack. And it was really neat and special to win and to do it in a sold-out crowd. I mean, it was standing room only. And be able to look up at the end of the night and see all those fans was really special.
And you've been on a bit of a tear lately. You picked up your first career All-Star victory at Lernerville and then the win here at Wayne County. And seems like you and your new race team are on a roll.
Yeah, I was just talking to my cousin Cody today when we were down at the shop working on the race car. He said, you know, it's kind of unbelievable where this team's at. I mean, this team isn't even a year old yet. Last year, I did everything myself. I worked in the car. I maintained the car. I drove to the racetrack, and at the racetrack, I was the crew chief and driver. And at the end of the season, we knew we had to hire somebody. And my cousin Cody came available, and right away, I've always wanted to work with him. He's very, very intelligent, very, very good with the race car. So when he came available, we snatched him up right away, and he's done an amazing job. He's changed some things in our race car, and our car is really rolling. And you know, the first few weeks that we raced, we kind of struggled, and it was kind of one of those things where you got to know each other, you know, and I finally got my confidence in my cousin and my driving style, and he started learning about me and what I needed, and it only took us, I think, 3 weeks, and we won our first race. So it was pretty amazing how quickly things clicked. And for this team to just start and already be winning All-Star races and contending every single night, it's pretty spectacular.
And to review on Saturday's race, you were up front pretty much the entire time, but you had a fuel stop. How unnerving was that, you know, when you're leading, you have all those cautions, and then you have to stop, and everyone has a chance to kind of catch their breath and maybe try to formulate a plan to go get you when you're up in the front?
You know, it was one of those things where I didn't want to red, but I knew our car wasn't perfect. And I was trying to think to myself, what am I going to tell Cody when he comes out here? And then I see him walk onto the track carrying a shock already. He's like, he read my mind. He can tell by watching a race car what the car needs. You know, he had that experience of driving himself, and then now watching and working on him, he knows. And right away he told me, he said, you know, we need more right rear drive, don't we? I go, yep. So he changed the shock, and after that red flag, our car was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I could go anywhere on the track, and he made the right call there, and he knew it before I could even tell him what the car needed. So it was very good. And but like you say, you know, anytime you're leading, you don't like any stops. You know, you want to keep on going. But that kind of worked out for our better in that situation.
Sounds like Lee Jacobs having the chemistry going his way with the Lewis family team for 2014. How did you get hooked up with them?
It would have been about 2 years ago, Johnny Lewis approached me, and he's always been a good family friend. My grandpa back in the 80s drove truck for their company, and so did my Uncle Dean for a little while, and we've always known them. You know, we've known them from when they raced sprint cars to even after their family tragedy that they had with sprint car racing. We still stayed in touch, and Johnny over the years has bought my dad a couple of race cars, and And 2 years ago, he approached me and wanted to help me out. And I was at a time in my career and where I was at that just kind of told me, said, you know, John, now's not the right time. I don't want you to waste your money. If we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. And at the end of that season, and it had been, 2 years now, he ended up buying me a car from TSR. And I teamed up with a guy, and he had a motor and a trailer, and we ran one night, and we blew a motor. And this guy couldn't afford to get his motor back, so we went and got the race car, and Johnny couldn't stand his car sitting on the sidelines, so he went and bought a complete team out. And within 3 weeks, I mean, our deal, we went from him just owning a race car to owning a complete race car team. So it was pretty amazing, and he's having a blast. You know, it's something that his entire family, after his little brother got killed back in, I'm thinking it was 84, 85, completely stepped away from racing. They never went to a race at all, and now his entire family is back involved. I mean, his mom and dad comes to the races. Both of his daughters have come to the races. His other brother, he just called him on Sunday and said, where are we racing at tonight? And Johnny had to tell him, said, well, we're not racing anywhere. It's Sunday. They're all excited to come back to the racetrack, and they're enjoying seeing the 81 car go back around the track.
And right now, Lee is currently fourth in the Ohio region for the All-Star Circuit of Champions, also the first repeat winner this year in All-Star competition. Joining us on the line right now, and he'll be at Butler Motor Speedway on Saturday night, which brings up a little interesting scenario, because on Saturday night, your dad's getting back in the seat again, but this time it's a little different situation with that Legends race. It's going to kind of harken back from when you started racing at Wayne County, when your dad was on the road, and you guys would call each other at the end of the night and kind of compare notes for the end of the night, so you get to do that one more time.
Yeah, it's going to be a really neat Saturday night. You know, I wish I could really be there with him, you know, and to be there and just see my dad strapping the car one more time, but my career's kind of taken off right here to where we got to go racing as much as we can. And we will definitely be on the phone as much as we can with each other all night long and keeping each other updated what's going on. But that's a neat deal that Rich Farmer's done at Fremont Speedway. I mean, the history that he is bringing back to that track is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, you're talking Kelly Kinzer, Rick Ferkel, my dad, my uncle Ed, some of the names that he's bringing back to that deal is absolutely amazing. And he thinks this is going to be all for fun at Fremont Speedway, but I have a feeling that when those guys are all racers, when they put a helmet on, that's not going to be fun anymore. They're there to race, and they're all there to win. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And I just hope for the sake of everybody that it's a good night. Everything goes good for everybody. And everybody has fun, and everybody stays safe.
Yeah, and the big thing is, who's going to fall out of the seat? Some of these guys haven't been in a car in a while, so it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. You've raced around the Fremont area quite a bit. You drove for the Burmeisters and stuff, so you have a real appreciation for the history there. So you look at the roster of that thing. Obviously, you know, take your dad out of the equation for a second. Who do you think in that roster has a shot at making a good run in that deal?
Out of everybody that's there, you know, I would really like to see Rick Ferkel do good, you know, but at his age, you know, he hasn't been in a car for a long, long time. I just want to see Rick just have fun one more time. But out of all the guys that's on that roster, Mark Keegan's probably the freshest one out of a race car and probably has three times as many laps as anybody around Fremont than anybody else that's going to be there. So Mark Keegan has to be right there at the top. Another one that's going to surprise people is going to be my Uncle Ed. I was very fortunate when my first year of racing sprint cars to race against my Uncle Ed. And he has a knack for just jumping in anything and being fast right away. He's a mechanic driver himself, and he can set the car up. And he's one of those guys I would look out for on Saturday night, because he could really turn some heads and he might be exciting to watch.
And, you know, that's actually kind of what I thought, too. I was looking through the roster. I'm like, I think Ed's got as good of a shot as anything. There's some people that think if he would have progressed through his career, he might have been kind of like the best one of that whole bunch in all reality. So,
well, you know, that's something that I've talked about my dad a lot. You know, of all the guys that he raced with, you know, my dad, Jack, Brad, and Ed. And my dad always told me, he said, Ed was probably the best out of all of us. Just because he was kind of like Sammy or the Wolfgang, to where he knew what to do to the car when he came in. Unlike Jack and my dad, you know, they came in, they had a good crew chief. Ed was smart enough to know exactly what the car needed and to tune it up himself. And he's very, very intelligent with the motors and the way the car operates. He'd probably be the dark horse in Saturday night. And like you said, out of the four of them starting their careers, he probably could have done amazing things racing if he didn't choose to stop. But that was his choice, and he's lived a great life, and now he has a son that's racing, and he's loving going to the racetrack every Saturday night and being with his son and watching his son race, too.
Lee Jacobs joining us here. You traveled all over the country through dad and stuff, and then you are still racing, but yet you're not a full-time racer. When we introduce you, you don't get the full-time racer tag on you. You're actually a school teacher by trade. So I've got to ask you, what took you in the direction of wanting to go into the educational field?
I just love children. You know, I mean, when I was in high school, I had a couple of nephews that were very, very young. And I loved babysitting and playing around with them, playing games and wrestling and stuff like that. And I always had a knack for children. And I thought when I first went that I wanted to do actually high school level and do math, because I always excelled in math when I was in school. But as I progressed through college, I changed and I went to early childhood where I could teach kindergarten through third grade. And this was my first full year of teaching. And, you know, I'm in a great place at a great school district and an unbelievable bunch of kids. And the crazy thing is the majority of my school, actually 70% of my school, is Amish. But it is amazing, and I love what I do. But like you said, you know, racing is not my profession. It's teaching. And, you know, we hired my cousin Cody, and I get to go down to the race shop three times a day for about 1 hour a time. So I don't get to spend a lot of time with the race car during the week, but last Friday was my last day at the school, and today I was actually for the first time all year be able to spend the entire day at the race shop, and it was good being around and seeing how things were working.
Do your students have any idea of what your summertime hobby is, and do they have a grasp of it? You mentioned there's 70% Amish, but I've seen Amish people at Wayne County Speedway. So do they have any idea of what your hobby, I guess as you could call it, is?
They do. You know, on my screensaver on my computer is a picture of my sprint car, and I always had one up there, and they always ask some questions about it, and I kind of explained to them, you know, on the weekends in the summertime, this is what Mr. Jacobs does. You know, he drives race cars, and he does that, and my whole family's done that for as long as I can remember. So that's just kind of what I do on the weekends. But then we won at Lernerville, and I put the picture of me standing on top of the wing, and the very next day when we went to school and the kids were there and they saw that picture, they go, "Mr. Jacobs, did you win a race?" And I said, "Yes." And They were all excited and got asked me a ton of questions about it, and it's neat to be able to talk to the kids about it. I really wanted to bring the car in because not very many of the kids get to witness or get to see a sprint car. I've already talked to my principal about next year being able to do something like that, bring the race car in and let the kids see it and get in and look around it and stuff. But to get them interested, you know, our sport right now is lacking the interest of the youth. We got to do something to get children involved and want to be at the racetrack and see this great sport that, you know, I love so very much.
And Lee Jacobs would know that better than anyone. He grew up in the sport. And which brings me to my final question tonight. When you won at Wayne County, you visited your dad in all those all-star victory lanes, a majority of them, and they weren't able to be at Lernerville. But to win that at Wayne County and then have the tables turn where he's running out to see you in victory lane, how special was that?
It was pretty incredible. You know, I'm sitting there in victory lane and I'm unbuckling from my seat, and he was the first voice I heard just screaming and going nuts. And I got out of the car and gave him a big hug. And after all the photos and everything, it roles really reversed. And it was a pretty special deal where he wanted to sit on my Nerf bar while I drove the car back to the pit area. And And it was pretty neat to be able to sit there, as I'm driving, be able to sit there next to my dad and talk to him. When I look back at it, of all the nights I used to do that with him, you know, and talk to him about how good of a race it was. And it was very special to have those roles reversed.
It's nothing like racing with your family. It's always kind of fun. So it was really awesome to see that happen on Saturday night. And I kind of had a feeling how special that was for you. And as soon as I wanted to have you on before or after Lernerville, but I was like, no, there's got to be something bigger coming up. I had a hunch, and I'm glad we waited so we could have you after the special win. And race fans, don't forget, you can see him Saturday night right up here in the Mitten at the Butler Motor Speedway. And hopefully you can make some points up there in the Ohio Chase there. You're a little bit behind in fourth place, but not an unreachable goal by any means.
No, you know, I think we can do it. You know, I told my cousin Cody, you know, it'd be really neat to be able to go after this Ohio deal and win the All-Star deal in Ohio. But Dale Blaney's going to be tough. Dale Blaney's really good with the Ohio tracks, and especially slick tracks. But that's where we've gotten very good, too. So hopefully, slowly, we'll be able to whittle away at it. And who knows, at the end of the year, maybe we'll be sitting on top of that deal, and it'd be a great feeling.
Well, hopefully you are, and then we get a chance to talk to you again. Lee, I appreciate you taking time out, and enjoy your summer vacation.
Hey, thank you so much, DJ. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Lee Jacobs, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Brian Liskey and I are going to break down the Hall of Fame weekend at Fremont Speedway. You're listening to DJ Slideways Live here on racesontheweb.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at EngineProParts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Blade Shock Technology is a cutting-edge shock bump stop technology company located in Northwest Ohio. Specializing in sprint car racing, new and used sales, service, and repair, Eric Slade and his crew have over 30 years' experience working with shocks, from the short tracks to the super speedways. For more information, visit SladeShockTechnology.com. Slade Shock Technology, where knowledge and experience make the difference.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing in racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air. As Must-See Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth, watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rocket around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records
to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat-out, foot-on-the-floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
If you love sprint car racing like we do, you need to get yourself to Pennsylvania this summer. Already recognized as one of the 10 must-see races of the year, the first annual Dirt Classic presented by Casey Kane on September 27th is stacking up to be a premier event. The race will be held at Lincoln Speedway and boasts the highest payout in the track's history with $20,000 on the line for the winner. But you don't have to wait until September to get your Dirt Classic fix. Join the team at this weekend's qualifier race Sunday, June 8th at Bedford Speedway. Fans can see Western and Central Pennsylvania teams unite for a $5,000 paycheck at a guaranteed starting spot in September's event. Welcome back to TJ Slideways Live here at RacesOnTheWeb.com. My next guest is the voice of the Fremont Speedway, and he has a very busy Saturday night lined up. They're going to have first the Hall of Fame inductions over at the Fremont Speedway, and if you haven't been to the Hall of Fame yet, if you want a true appreciation of the Fremont community and the racing in that area, spend a good half hour in that museum, and don't just walk through it. Actually, look through the albums and stuff. You'll have a pretty good idea what's going on. And he's going to announce the first ever Legends Sprint Car Race at Fremont Speedway. Brian Liskey joining us on the line. And Brian, this is one of the most anticipated weekends I can ever remember at the Fremont Speedway.
Yeah, when Rich Farmer started talking about doing this, the Legends race, this past winter, he started making phone calls, and this thing just snowballed. I mean, you know, you talk to one driver, and oh gosh, I'd love to do this. And then that makes another driver want to do it. And we ended up with 23 Legends racers. And the criteria was you had to be at least 50 years old and had not raced in 2 years. And it didn't take us long to fill up the roster.
I was going to say, you can almost fill up that roster on any Saturday night just walking through the pit area at Fremont, just seeing who's hanging out.
Absolutely. That's the neat part about it. When you have a racetrack that's been in existence for 64 years, you know, people just keep coming back. And that's the beauty of Fremont Speedway. My oldest son works in the pit tower at Fremont, and it's been a classic education for him to have some of those legend guys up there every week and telling the stories they tell. And he just enjoys that thoroughly, and I'm glad he got to be a part of all that.
So I'm looking at the roster. Kenny Clark, Mark Keegan, Eric Rankin, Rodney Duncan, Jim Leonard, Clay Kye, Bobby Distel, Kenny Jacobs, Larry Helms, George Dussel, Kelly Kinzer, Jerry Niemeyer. That's the first half of the field. I mean, just right there, Brian Neeb, Charlie Fisher, Rick Ferkel, Al Liskey. We might know him from somewhere. Gary Griffith.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, Joe Keegan. Ed Honschild, who's actually my pick to win. Charlie Schwartz. When's the last time Charlie Schwartz got in a sprint car? It's been decades.
Oh, at least we were just talking before we went on the air here that if you look down through that whole roster, it's like the starting feature lineup from about 1982. I'm thinking Charlie Fisher last drove a sprint car in the early 80s.
Yeah, easily. I mean, I started going down to Ohio about 1984-85, and he was well on his way out of a sprint car at that point into his late model career only. And so, I mean, it's been a while. Rick Doherty, Lee Potter, Jimmy Leaser. I mean, you look at this field, I mean, this is like a who's who throughout the decades. First of all, let's kind of go to Rick Ferkel here. It's been a while since Rick got in a car, and that's going to be something special to see the Ohio Traveler strap it on again.
Well, the interesting part about that deal is Brian Bloomfield, who was the crew chief for Jason Myers when they won their World of Outlaw Championships, is putting the car together for Rick and has leased a Scott Gressman 305 motor board. So they're taking that part real serious.
Oh, wow. That is unbelievable. And then, of course, Jim Linder, who's going to have all the kids wrenching on it. Do you think Mike's going to make him run to the railroad tracks if he doesn't get it done on Saturday night?
I would think he would. The interesting part about that was, you know, they had that beautiful number three car they restored that Jim won the 1975 Eldora Speedway Track Championship in. And we had our Legends cars out there, our old-timers cars, we call them, for an exhibition race. And Jim kind of got in trouble because he was gassing that thing up a little bit. He said, I got to get the rust knocked off me for this thing.
I told Mike, I said, you should make him walk to the railroad tracks because he running too fast around there. Now, Mark Keegan's not really that far removed. It took me a second. Wow, it has been 2 years since Mark's gotten a car. But he's going to be there, too. He's probably the freshest of this bunch looking at the roster.
I tell you what, Kenny Jacobs is going to be tough to beat. Kenny is really taking. He made the suggestion that the guy who wins this feature ought to get a 410 ride and tag the back of the 410 feature and run that one as well.
Heck, or just take the 305, just see what you can do with
the tail. There you go.
Yeah, and Kelly Kinzer, another guy we haven't seen in the seat in a while, that's going to be very familiar to fans, young and old, and should have a generational gap where a lot of people could relate to him.
Absolutely. That one surprised me. Rich Farmer had to really work his tail off to convince Kelly Kinzer to get back in the sprint car, and that one surprised me. Him and Charlie Sports were the two surprise ones out of that deal.
And Gary Griffith back into a car. Of course, the Griffiths very well represented in Northern Ohio Racing.
Well, the other interesting aspect about that is Gary Griffith and Eric Rankin are going into, and Clay Keim are all being inducted that day into the Fremont Speedway Hall of Fame. So that's going to make their night even more special.
And speaking of Clay, because he's on the graphic sides of things, I'm starting to see in social media, this is getting serious. There are guys like vinyling up wings in their classic trim. Rodney Duncan's got one, and other people will make them look like the cars they drove back then. I mean, this is getting pretty serious.
Absolutely, and we want it to be serious. I mean, we didn't want people to think this was just some sort of gimmick or exhibition thing. This is paying $1,000 to win, and it's qualifying and a heat race and heat races and a feature. So this is a serious race, and talking to Jim Linder, he's in the top five of all time wins at Fremont. I think he's one away from tying Mark Keegan, so he's really wanting to get that win so he can tie Mark Keegan in the win list.
And let's be honest, it pays $1,000 to win. This thing could pay $100 to win, and these guys would probably race the same.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, come on. At this point, they've been out of it long enough, and a guy like Brian Neiman's stuff, man, that would have been a big payday even back when he was racing. So, I mean, they'll be elbows up. It's a really interesting group of drivers, and I think it's going to add to a really special weekend for you guys.
Absolutely. We're going to have a band after the races. We're setting up a tent so the fans can mingle with these legends and just enjoy the day. The day starts, we open the gates at 1:30. The Hall of Fame induction's at 2:30, and the first 1,600 people that purchase the admission ticket, you do have to purchase an admission ticket to go to the Hall of Fame induction, because that gets you into the races then that night. We'll get a free T-shirt from Vision Quest as well. So it's going to be a long day, but it's going to be a fun, emotional. There's going to be a lot of laughter, a lot of tears. The Hall of Fame induction is always one of those just special events that I always tell people, if you never go to the races, at least go to that.
And who else is going to the Hall of Fame other than the previous three we mentioned?
Todd Vance is going in. A lot of people remember him from the 80s in that number 32 sprint car. Street stock champion LJ Connor is going in. Harold Kemenaw, who owned the 3X cars that Fred Linder won All-Star Championships with, and that Jack Hewitt drove and Johnny Bieber drove. He's going to be inducted in the owner category. Gary Griff's going in as an engine builder, mechanic, and driver, sort of, because he did all three. We got the Lisa Wright combo that owned cars that Harold McGilton and Al Franks won a lot of races in. They're going in the ownership category. Jim Ward, another guy whose son now races dirt trucks and is a dirt truck champion, he's getting inducted as well.
And I tell people, you know, when you first walk into the Fremont Hall of Fame, if you just take the stroll at one lap and walk out, you're probably, if you haven't been around the area, you aren't going to get it. But if you walk through the area and you look through the albums, it'll give someone a pretty good idea of why you can have a legends race like this at Fremont Speedway and why it's so special.
Absolutely. It was interesting. We had the two-day All-Star show, the Memorial Day weekend at Fremont, and the Hall of Fame really got a workout. That place was packed both days, and the people that were spending hours in there looking through the albums and looking at all the pictures we have in there and all the memorabilia, it got a real good workout. And we gained a whole bunch of new members for the Hall of Fame because we had it open both days early, and people got to take advantage of that.
It's just a really neat deal. And for listeners, that we do have a pretty good listener base outside the Ohio area. And if you've never been up there, the sprint car culture up there is so ingrained in the community. I try to tell people, it's hard to walk into any kind of bar, restaurant, or even locally owned business, and there'll probably be a sprint car photo or plaque on the wall of the car that business sponsored.
Absolutely. It's funny. You can go to any business and walk into the Walmart store in Fremont, you're going to see somebody with a racing t-shirt on. As you point out, you go to any restaurant, any business, there's pictures, there's flyers from Fremont Speedway. It's just, I call it the racing capital of Ohio. You know, a lot of people point to Eldora and this and that, but Fremont's been around for 64 years, and you look at the talent that's come out of Fremont, not just in the driving ranks, but we've got people that cut their teeth working on race cars at Fremont that are now in NASCAR. You know, Frankie Kerr moved to Fremont, and he's talked about when he retires from his NASCAR roots, he's coming back to Fremont because that community is all about racing.
And what's crazy is how that track ever stayed closed for a couple of years there still is just beyond my imagination. And it's just amazing the renaissance in Jim Ford and, you know, everything now that has happened, you know, from what was a pretty dire situation 15, 16 years ago.
Absolutely. And that just goes to show you, it doesn't matter what your history is. You've got to have good people. And that's what happened to the racetrack. You know, Gary Kern had been the promoter forever, and he sold it off to somebody else, and they didn't have the same passion that the previous promoters had. And it took Jim Ford getting back in there and with that passion, and now Rich Farmer and the passion he has for the racetrack to keep that thing rolling along.
And not only that, but what I feel has helped a bunch is linking the past with the present. There, you know, ever since Jim Ford took over, and even Rich Farmer has continued it, maybe even embraced it even more, if that's possible, is when you walk through the pit area at Fremont or even through the grandstands, you have a sense of the history there. There are people that did legendary things there, and they're all still there and part of it. So those younger guys get to hang out with those people and learn from those people, and they're still part of the racing community there. They just don't go off on a boat somewhere.
Absolutely. And that's why I try to tell these, like when I walk through the pits, the early races the year prior to the Hall of Fame induction, I tell these young kids, especially the kids in the 305s, come to the track early and attend that Hall of Fame induction. It'll give you a perspective. You're racing because of these people. If it wasn't for these people, you wouldn't be racing right now. And you need to come and you need to see what the history of Fremont Speedway is and embrace it, because that's going to be your future.
I was kind of thinking about this last night, actually, even though it's Attica Raceway Park related. You look at that Outlaw show last week, and you look at Craig Mintz, who's finished second, and you start thinking about the kids that started in that 305 class that are now in the 410 class now. It would be really difficult to think where that 410 class would be if that 305 stepping stone hadn't been there for a lot of the guys you have now.
Absolutely. And the other thing the 305 division does is it encourages some of the veterans who don't want to race 410s anymore to stay active in the sport. You have a good handful of veterans that continue to race, and it's because of the 305 ranks, like John Ivey and Bobby Clark and those sorts. It keeps them active in racing, and that keeps fans coming in the gates, and that's huge.
Yeah, and not only that, but if you're a kid and you're racing against John Ivey and all those guys, and that's who you're racing against, getting your racing education from, by the time you get up to the 410 ranks and you're ready to make that jump, you are going to be truly ready.
Absolutely. And you ask some of the kids that have made that jump, and they credit those guys, racing wheel to wheel with those guys, for learning and teaching them how to race clean and how to race with other people.
And that all comes back to the, you know, the history present in the area at Attica and Fremont and all that stuff. So our poll question on the websites this week, actually one I threw out on social media, and I know you and I were at both the, well, I was at one of these races. I was at the previous one, but I listened to Friday's Outlaw show. And I was thinking about Attica history for a moment. And what moment do you think was probably the bigger moment or the most memorable moment? Keegan beating Kinzer on Speed Week, or the Ohio sweep of the Outlaws last week?
Wow.
I know. I mean, yeah, we don't ask easy questions. I thought about that, and it's like, wow. I mean, that is interesting to compare. Which one do you think is more memorable?
Well, you know, a lot of the veterans will point to Mark Keegan, you know, first getting passed by Steve Kinzer and then coming back and passing Steve Kinzer to get that win. But I got to rank this World of Outlaw deal with the sweep from the Ohio guys. You know, even the Pennsylvania Posse didn't get that done. And you know, it just goes to show you how tough the weekly competition is at Attica and Fremont. And Craig Mintz said about it. He goes, you know, when you've got to race Dale Blaney and Tim Schaefer week in and week out, It's going to make you better. And so when the World of Outlaws comes down, you don't think that much of it.
And the only reason I might put Keegan's win ahead of that, and the only reason is that Lenny Ferguson team, they had crashed earlier in the week. And I mean, they compared to Kinzer's operation at the time, that was a pretty small operation where, and I think this is a credit to your racers. I was happy for those guys, but it did not necessarily surprise me those guys swept the top three. It seems like they have gotten, the race teams have gotten better, and the drivers have gotten better in that area as a whole over the past 10 years or so.
Absolutely, and you're right. The Lenny Ferguson team, you know, having crashed and kind of, it was a last-minute deal to throw that together. And the like I said, the other part that was interesting about that is Mark Keegan got passed by Steve Kinzer and didn't give up. And came back and got him. And that was the best part of the whole deal.
And what a lot of people might not realize is back then, that was almost like the death nail. You get passed by Steve Kinzer, you are not getting back by. And it's hard to imagine this era of kind of like where we have a lot of competition and stuff, how dominant some of those guys were. But what an awesome night on Friday night. And to be coming off that and into this Legends race had to create even more excitement because everyone's on such a high.
Absolutely. You know, we got a big month here coming up, both Attica and Fremont. You know, and then we got Ohio Sprint Speed Week. It's only 3 weeks away. They're going to be kicking off. So it's going to be a big month of racing.
Yeah, how many Speed Week races are you doing, by the way, out of curiosity?
All of them.
You're going to be at all of them. Awesome. Well, I will see you at two of them, at least maybe five, depending on what I can negotiate with work and stuff. So I'm looking forward to getting back there. Hey, you got to pay the bills. This doesn't quite do it, so I got to actually go to the day job and get it done. But Brian, it's always a pleasure visiting with you. And if people want more information, where can they find out about the Legends race this weekend?
You can go to FremontOHSpeedway.com.
Well, Brian, it's always great to visit with you, and I am so excited for the whole community up there this week. I hope it's a good, safe race, and hopefully a building block for something that's going to grow into the future.
Absolutely, and we're looking forward to it, and it's going to be a true event. It's going to be a day-long and evening-long event, and I think people will not be disappointed at all with this.
I bet a few might even see the sun come up at the fairgrounds, just a hunch.
I guarantee that's what's going
to
happen.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you for making time out to visit with us, and have a blast this weekend.
I will. Thank you, TJ.
All right. That's Brian Liskey from the Fremont Speedway. When we come back, we're going to talk to David Byrd about their return to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You're listening to TJ Sideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Blade Shock Technology is a cutting-edge shock bump stop technology company located in Northwest Ohio. Specializing in sprint car racing, new and used sales, service, and repair, Eric Slade and his crew have over 30 years' experience working with shocks, from the short tracks to the super speedways. For more information, visit SladeShockTechnology.com. Slade Shock Technology, where knowledge and experience make the difference.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing of racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air. As Must-See Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth, watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rock it around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat-out, foot-on-the-floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
If you love sprint car racing like we do, you need to get yourself to Pennsylvania this summer. Already recognized as one of the 10 must-see races of the year, the first annual Dirt Classic presented by Casey Kane on September 27th is stacking up to be a premier event. The race will be held at Lincoln Speedway and boasts the highest payout in the track's history with $20,000 on the line for the winner. But you don't have to wait until September to get your Dirt Classic fix. Join the team at this weekend's qualifier race Sunday, June 8th at Bedford Speedway. Fans can see Western and Central Pennsylvania teams unite for a $5,000 paycheck at a guaranteed starting spot in September's event. Welcome back to TJ Slideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com. Don't forget, sprint car fans, you can catch the Sprints on Dirt versus the National Racing Alliance Midseason Championship at Mike Ulrich Memorial July 19th right here on RacesOnTheWeb.com. Free live video and audio from the big sprint car race there July 19th at the Crystal Motor Speedway live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com. Our next guest is bringing some throwback to the Indianapolis 500 for the 2015 season. Of course, the Byrd family, long synonymous with short track fans, fielding entry for Rich Vogler and other drivers throughout the years at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Well, the announcement was made on Memorial Day weekend that the Byrds are going to field another car, and they're going to, in the hearken and the tradition of their family, going to have Brian Clausen drive the car. And I was lucky enough to talk to David Byrd that weekend, and we were lucky to have him on tonight. So David, first of all, thank you for joining us tonight. And we'd like to, you know, the number one question we've had from readers is what brought about wanting to bring a Byrd entry back to the Speedway?
First off, thanks to you for having me on the show. It's really my pleasure. Been a big fan of your work for a long time, so it was great to finally meet you and now to talk to you again. So that's a big question, actually. What is bringing us back to Indy? You know, we've just been away for so long. And, you know, you go to the 500 every year, or we go to the 500 every year, and it just, you're not involved. It just, once you've been involved for so long, it just eats you up inside. So the passion's always been there, and it's always been a matter of, oh, we're just one sponsor away from being able to go back to the 500 and to, you know, reconnect with that part of our identity, part of our history, part of our family, part of our brand, really. So it really comes down to two things. One, obviously the desire to be there. Two, and we want to win. Two, it really has to do with things we're doing as a family and as a company. and as a brand. The Jonathan Bird's brand has been around for almost 26 years now for our restaurant, for our banquet and catering operation, and we're making some major changes to that. And as part of that major change, we said we need to do something to also reconnect with our past and reconnect with our customer base and reconnect, especially in Central Indiana, with so many people the way they identify us. And that was with the Indy 500. And then to go beyond that, it was with Short Trackers.
And that's where I wanted to go next, actually, is so you had the idea to come back, but when did you guys laser in on Clausen? Was there much discussion about anyone else, or was he kind of like one of the first guys that came to mind?
I've said this many times to those who have talked about it. First, last, and only guy that we even considered. And we first reconceived the idea of going back to Indy in late January. I was actually working with another racing team, helping with some of their public relations and marketing efforts, and just began to really think. And the team actually I was working with, I had worked with Brian a couple of years ago when he did some Indy Lights races. And so I got to know him and really saw what he was able to do in a car and up close and personal. So once we reconceived that we were going back to Indy, and we actually targeted 2016 as our initial plan, which gave us a nice 2-year ramp up. Of course, that all changed as we began to work forward. I put together the proposal to kind of internally to the family and to our businesses and the people that would need to be involved. And in that initial proposal that I put together to run up the flagpole with everybody, the name was that. And then there was Brian Clausen, and it's I said, here's who he is, here's his age, here's his resume, here's what he did at Indy, and that was pretty much it. And nobody else was going to have any input as far as that goes. And when I had a chance to meet with Brian when he was out racing in between Outlaw shows in the Phoenix area, went and sat down with him and said, this is what we're doing, and we're going back to Indy. We plan on going back and staying there for a long time, and you're our guy. Are you in? And that was pretty much how the conversation went. And he was a little taken aback, a little surprised. He was obviously enthusiastic right from the start, but naturally a little wary as well. Granted, we have history at the Speedway, but we haven't been there in 10 years. So it was nice to have some confidence from him once I laid out our program and what our intentions were, that we could actually deliver on that. And he was willing to stake part of his future with us. But he was definitely a throwback kind of guy. I mean, with the number of USAC championships he already has, 2 sprint, 2 midget, 3 national drivers championships, some decent runs in the lights cars. I thought a strong month of May at Indy in 2012, where maybe his final qualifying position in the race didn't really reflect how strong he really was right from the get-go. And, I knew there was a fire there, that he was a passion to get back to the Speedway. So, and of course, the 2-time National Midget Driver of the Year. So with our history with Vogler, we were all about midgets. So we just ran midgets from 84 through 90. And so a guy that was a 2-time USAC midget champion and the 2-time National Midget Driver of the Year, well, he's right in our wheelhouse. And, I've always said if a guy can handle a midget and win in a midget, he can win an IndyCar. And that's kind of always been my mantra. So he's definitely a throwback to a guy like Vogler. He's my dad had Vogler. Our dad had Vogler. So my brother, myself, my mom, going forward, we have Clausen. And so he's kind of our vocal for the next generation. And but we also had guys like Stan Fox. We tried to run a guy. We tried to qualify Brian Tyler at the Speedway 1 year. We had Andy Michener in our car 1 year. John Andretti, of course, with his short track background. So it's been a return to our roots, and just honestly really exciting.
And originally, what you mentioned, it was going to be a 2016 effort, but then it's been pushed up. You're going to do 2015. What allowed that to happen?
Really just the way we were able to put the program together, the funding as far as that's always a big key. And, we were able to put all the pieces together that needed to happen. People have wondered if Brian had to bring some sponsorship dollars to this effort. And the answer to that is no, not a single dime that he has to put in to make this happen. We are fully committed to him. And so once we were able to put all those pieces in place, that really just came together a lot quicker than I thought it would. There's just been a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of support, and then just We knew that it was going to provide a lot of value for the Jonathan Bridge brand and for our, some of our other businesses as well, as we really take the model that we're putting in place and harness it to our benefit. And then, you know, over time, hopefully be able to use the 500 as our base and then grow out and you know, if possible, run Brian and additional IndyCar oval races. But then to expand outwards and downwards, so to speak, to get involved once again in the short track races and midget sprint cars, Silver Crown, wing sprints, wherever it makes sense. And it just got to be the point that in order to really do it effectively and to take advantage of everything that was being presented to us, waiting until 2016 was actually going to be counterproductive for us. So pushing forward to next year and really getting everything started right now, because and the Indy 500 is a year-round effort to do it right. So getting everything started now, getting the pieces in place was exceptionally important for us. And we feel like that 2 years would have been you know, great for a run-up, but we didn't end up needing it. Now we've got 1 year, and we're going to be good to go.
And then, of course, you told me at Anderson that you guys wanted to make a big splash for being the first announcement after the Indy 500, and you did accomplish that. You're going to partner with KVSH Racing. What are they going to bring to the table for you for this Indy effort?
What they are bringing to the table is the commitment and dedication that they brought, especially to their program in 2013, where they were intent on winning the 500. And with the equipment they had, the engineering, the data acquisition, the shock program, the shaker rig, the wind tunnel program, the testing, all those things that they put forth to that effort to win the 500 in 2013, and they did with Tony Kanaan, they have committed that to us as well. So, and you know, and our intention is to build with them and not make this just a one-shot deal. So, all the same resources they put into their full-time effort, you know, we're going to have that as well. There's a couple more pieces to that puzzle that we're gonna save and have a little bit more, make some more waves down the road. I'm all about dribbling out the information to keep people engaged with us over time. So hope you forgive me for holding back a little bit of information. But that's going to make it, I think, even more intriguing and interesting for the Brian Cawson fans and the short track fans out there. But we, you know, they're going to be real partners in this, and we're going to be real partners with them. You know, they run a solid, you know, full-time program. You know, that team put four cars on the track at the Speedway and had, you know, Townsend Bell up there in the top three going into the final stretch. So along with their win, along with their experience there, the experience of Jimmy Vassar to be there that Brian can rely on to hone his racecraft and learn about how to make an IndyCar go even faster is going to be extremely valuable. You know, right now they have Allister Jr. working for their program as a driver coach, and if that continues, that'll be just one more tool for Brian to rely on next year. So they, you know, it was great. Jimmy was enthusiastic about this. Kevin Kalkoven was enthusiastic. James Sullivan, who's the S in KVSH, James Sullivan, he's been extraordinarily helpful and enthusiastic in putting this program together, as he and I have attempted to work together on something for the last 9 years, and it's finally come together. So it's been a good fit, and, you know, it's going to be a full month program. You know, we get the full engine package, the full tire package, and you know, everything that we need, we're going to have. And it's something that, you know, I think Brian deserves to have. And I think it's something that perhaps a short track star like himself has not had in an IndyCar in quite some time.
What's the testing program going to look like for Brian? Is he going to be able to test it all before the month of May? Is that still being formulated at this point?
That's still being formulated, but that is the plan. We don't have any hard and fast. I mean, obviously testing in IndyCar is fairly well restricted and regulated. It's, you know, reduced to tire tests and manufacturer's tests, and there's just not a lot of private testing that takes place. But it's important to us, obviously, and to KVSH as well, because their name is on the KVSH Jonathan Bridge race and entry. It's going to be important for all of us to put our best foot forward at Speedway and come right out of the box. And, you know, with a short time to get up to speed. So we need to make sure that Brian is able to take advantage of the testing days that are available. So while that is not, specifics aren't in place, we do have time. You know, right now they're in the middle of the stretch run of the season. So, you know, we'll get to the end of the season, by the time the Fontana race runs, we'll have a pretty good idea of what that testing program is going to look like as it goes into the off season and in the lead up to the 500. But again, it's all about the resources that are being put in place to make sure that Ryan, as a short track star that he is, has what he needs to show what not only he can do, but what other short track guys can do if given the opportunity.
How has reaction to this announcement been in your eyes? Has it met your expectations or exceeded it?
You know, I'm going to say it's done both, I think. In some ways, I was fully expecting the response that's been out there. But at the same time, some of the types of responses were completely unexpected. I guess I'm just repeating myself or just answering your question with words that match up to the question. But people in central Indiana where Jonathan Bridges is located, you know, reaching out and saying, you know, you want to figure out a way to win my heart and win my wallet. And you put a short tracker in the Indy 500 and I'm there with you. So, I think I expected something like that, but, just to have it put out, just said straight out like that and put out on Twitter or sent in a private message or on a message board. That was a little bit unexpected, but Brian has just a following of passionate fans who have been extremely gracious in the way that they have, you know, come out of the woodwork to talk about how excited they are. And I don't know if it's just his fans or if it's, you know, short track racing fans in general and that big short track family that Brian actually talked about when we made our announcement at the Speedway. But, he's a unique kid in a unique spot, I think. And he's going to, he's not only carrying, as I told him, all of our hopes and dreams, so no pressure on him, but he's really carrying the hopes and dreams of the short track fans and the short track racers, you know, around the country that, if he can do it and show well, which we fully expect him to do, that they can, you know, still have the 500 as an aspiration. So all that has been kind of wrapped up in the way the response has been and the stories that have been written and the people who have reached out. And it's been fantastic, and I imagine it's going to be just even more so as we get closer and closer to the date.
Well, I know on behalf of myself and everyone involved in short track racing, it is appreciated that someone is giving a short track driver a quality effort at Indy, and we are really looking forward to the month of May next year, and I'm looking forward to seeing all the announcements come out as it gets closer.
Well, I appreciate that. And, people thank us for, you know, putting Brian in the car and, you know, we just turn that right around and say, hey, you know, we're thankful for him giving us the shot too. So it goes both ways, because if he wasn't willing to invest himself with us, you know, we wouldn't be able to do it with him. And we just, you know, not there's anything wrong with any number of dozens of guys out there that could be, you know, exceptional racers at Indy. But I just don't think it would feel quite the same if we were going back to Indy with anybody else.
All right. Well, I really appreciate your time, David. Like I said, look forward to seeing what comes up over the next year. And I'm sure the countdown clock over there, your business is running right now. And it probably seems a lot closer than what it is. It probably feels like it's flying by for you at this point.
It is. And it's there's work to be done every day. I mean, you know, people were wondering why we were making the announcement so early. And as far as I'm concerned, it wasn't because, you know, there's just a lot of work to be done to make sure we take full advantage of it. And we're going to be, you know, going out to watch Brian race and during midget week and sprint week and, you know, paying attention to everything he's doing. And that goes right into the way we're building our program as well, because we want this to be the most, a solid Indy 500 effort, but really the most accessible, the most engaged, the most communicative, the most fan-friendly, all those things, because we want to bring that short track ethos to the Speedway. And to really do that takes a lot of work. And we know there's a lot of eyes on us as well. So it's an everyday thing. There's not going to be any off season for this effort. Not that I'm complaining, because I'm not, because you know, this is a passion and we love it. So it's, that May is going to be here really, really quick.
All right. So short track fans, make sure to if you see David walk around, make sure to thank him for putting a short tracker in an Indy car. One final question. When people go to hospitality, yeah, is there going to be the fried chicken? I mean, come on. I mean, we have to ask about the chicken. Oh, yeah.
Of course.
All I've heard about since this went down is the fried chicken. So I've got to ask, the fried chicken's going to be at hospitality, I assume.
Oh, of course. It's, you know, it's honestly the fried chicken. I'm biased, of course, but it's really the best fried chicken in the world. No offense to anybody whose grandma and mom makes great fried chicken, but ours is truly the best. And it's going to be, of course, a mainstay of our hospitality efforts every day. We might just set up a pressure cooker and make it right there on site at Speedway in our hospitality area. So, yeah, there's elements like that we want to bring into it because, you know, it's just, that's who we are. We're just, in the end, we may be involved in the Indy 500, but my dad used to always say this, and I think it's still true. We're all just a bunch of fried chicken cooks from Greenwood, Indiana. Just going racing.
Well, we really appreciate it, and I don't miss many meals, so the last question had to be about food. So we really appreciate your time, David, tonight, and best of luck with this IndyCar effort. Look forward to talking to you as it gets closer.
All right, thank you, sir.
That's David Byrd. He's bringing him and his family, bringing Brian Clausen back to the Indy 500. And that's going to wrap up this edition of TJ Slideways Live. I'd like to thank our guests Lee Jacobs, Brian Liskey, and David Byrd for being on tonight. We'll do this again next Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Thank you and good night.
Thank you for listening to this